Expounded Universe, Season 13, Episode 10, maybe 11, whatever, Smite Walks with Rhythm. The book, Mall Lockdown, by Joe Schreiber, in or around 2004, Chapters 37 through 40, here we go.
Everybody, welcome to Expounded Universe, the Star Wars novel discussion podcast. I say the as if there's only the one. I'm sure there's like 50 of this show. But anyway, I'm Jeff, your host, joined as always by your other host, John. John, how you doing?
The same.
Really? I didn't even say how I was doing. You're just assuming you're doing the same?
No, I'm doing the same, as I always am.
Okay, so you're comparing it to yourself and not to me.
Indeed.
Okay. You see, I'm so self-centered.
I know. It's okay. I forgive you, because I'm so forgiving.
That's so good of you.
I know.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear you're doing the same. I mean, not that great glad, because normally you're not doing very good.
You know, normally.
Normally, you kind of just are getting by and generally suck.
Yeah, pretty much. That's my general vibe.
Beats me why you do that. Sure as hell ain't my scene. We had to push this back by a day because I had a really rough day yesterday. Now we're having sound issues. Hopefully this episode we get through it and record it and it's going to be good for everybody. That's my sincere hope right now.
Oh yeah, normally I don't hope that this episodes are good, but you know, right now I hope this one is.
It'd be a first.
let's try at least once.
Yeah. Anything else going on with you?
I mean, not a whole lot. Playing lots of Vigmo games, fucking around.
Sounds good. Yeah, I just finished turning in our second batch of revisions to the third book, and now I'm kind of like, now what do I do? So I've been playing a little bit of Slay the Spire, actually. I haven't played it in forever, and it was just, I suddenly had an urge to see it again.
Nice.
So, I've just been having the ludicrous run of good luck that I had really hoped for when coming back to the game.
Aww.
Where I was like, what's up, the heart? Here's 440 poison.
Aww. Yeah. I have been playing Loop Hero.
I've seen pictures of Loop Hero, but I'm not otherwise familiar. So you'll have to go into a little bit further detail.
It is a game where the entire gameplay is on a literal loop. You walk around, your little pixel figure walks around a loop, and you come back to your camp, and then you keep doing them. Every loop, the enemies you fight get harder, and you have almost a deck construction thing to it in that you decide what cards you will get that you can then put on the map to make things. And these can be like terrain stuff, so you could add like mountains and forests and deserts. You can add in villages or swamps or cemeteries, whatever, and anything you put on there changes how things work.
I'm looking at little screenshots of it now, and it's very cute.
It's neat. It's a real good roguelite type game where, you know, you're going to go through loops, honestly, where you're not even trying to kill the boss. You are just trying to get some, like, loot to bring back to your camp to make it better so that you can face the boss at some point.
Huh, okay. Yeah, it looks cool. The mechanics I'm seeing on screen here are actually kind of intriguing.
Oh, yes.
I might consider this at some point.
Yeah, I beat the game. I've been, the last couple days, been trying to do some of the secret bosses. I just beat a secret boss today, actually, before we started recording. So good times. It's the secret boss you get by making your entire loop swamps.
Oh cool, that's neat. I think I might actually give this a shot. I played a game of I'm still talking about it. I did a game of Slay the Spire yesterday where I tried out the monk, immediately got the prismatic shard in the whale gave it to me. Which was like, you get cards from everybody. And I ended up building a go into divinity and spam shivs build.
Lol.
And it worked because every shiv did like, you know, 12 damage, and I could generate dozens of them. It actually worked. It got me almost all the way through.
Nice.
Yeah. Stupid, but funny.
Same.
Speaking of stupid, but funny, how about that Star Wars?
Star Wars.
Segways.
Oh, segways.
I don't remember where we left off specifically. Is it a 1-2? Did it go right from the warden's? I think it was, hey, Jabba, come pick up your boys. Is that where we ended?
I got your dudes. Come get them.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was that or... Oh, no, it was the... I'm sorry. It was that pointless reveal that Zero answers to another name.
I mean, that's so bad of a reveal.
Well, yeah, especially because who cares? Yeah, we know he answers to several other... No one thought his name was Zero.
Yeah, no one was like, oh, yeah, his God-given Christian name was Zero. I mean, you never know. It's only... Star Wars. God knows anyone in Star Wars can have whatever stupid-ass name they want.
I think there's at least two droids and a Hutt that are all current canon characters named Zero.
Good. Fuck them.
So there's no shortage of Zero characters. This guy's just some sort of also-ran.
Oh.
But anyway, the we certainly do open up this episode with... The meeting hall full of dudes who work for Jabba. Jabba's in there with them in the form of a big old life-size hologram, and Siddiqui's in there too, just sort of reveling in the moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one of those times for the warden where you're like, oh, man, she's just loving this. And given that what happens in this chapter, you're like, wow, Siddiqui's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, there's got to have been an easier way to accomplish this than what she actually ends up doing. But so to recap, she's gathered, I forget how many, but about a dozen to 15 guards in this room.
Yeah.
Our point of view guard is a guy by the name of Smite, who's all hopped up on spice and definitely also works for Jabba.
Yes. The shitty little guy who has definitely been trying to seem like a big man around Maul, and now he's all hopped up on glitter stim and ready to fuck around until he sees Jabba show up. And then he is like, oh, fuck my ass.
Ah, shit. I just found out. And so Siddiqui's just like, all right, Jabba, who among these chumps back here is yours? And this chapter actually sees Jabba laughing and talking. And he's just like, none of them. None of those are my guy. I've never seen any of them before in my life. What are you going to do about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Smite is already freaking out at this point. Like, he has pressed himself against the wall and is just sweating profusely. I'm like, man, even if she was like, oh, okay, Jabba, and then looked at the rest of the guards, she'd be like, oh, that guy's obviously guilty of some shit, even if he ain't yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess I'd also be scared, even if this was a case of mistaken identity, that clearly Siddiqui thinks I work for Jabba, and she's asking Jabba, and Jabba's just going ahead and saying, oh, just kill all those guys. I don't care.
Hmm.
Like, even if this is a complete mistaken identity situation, if you're a guard in this room, you've got to feel turbo fucked right now.
Oh, I mean, especially because she's like, hey, if you don't claim them, then I'm gonna murder him. And Jabba's like, sweet, fucking kill him. What do I give a shit? And at that point, you're like, man, there's no good way for me to get out of this.
Yeah, exactly. He knows he's doomed. But we get a little bit more back and forth between Jabba and Siddiqui, where she's just like, all right, so here's the deal. Whoever comes forth and admits that they work for Jabba, I'm gonna let you live.
Yeah, and she presses a little button, and the wall over opposite where the hollow projection is slides open, and she's like, gentlemen, I believe you know Mr. Nailhead and Mr. Strabo.
Yep, and in come our two former leaders of the Gravity Massive and Bone Kings. They're looking around, and right away, this is enough to spook a few of the guards. One of them steps forward and is like, I work for Jabba. I work for Jabba. Please don't kill me.
Oh, yeah.
Also, that guy works for Jabba.
And him, and his house, and Jabba's buddies at Fred's house, and Bill's house.
And a few of them are like, shut the fuck up, whatever your name is. You're getting us all killed and shit. And he's like, I don't care, I want to live. So we, like, outs half the room, including Smite.
Oh, yeah. The the weird thing to me is, like, she brings in horrible murderers, and you're like, great, nobody here has a weapon or their little drop box to blow up people's hearts, except for her. And she's just like, hey, if you step forward, maybe you won't get murdered horribly. And the fact that one guy's like, fuck yeah, let's do this. I'm going to out everybody. Yeah. And then she's like, cool, now you can all die.
Yeah. All right. Obviously, I wasn't actually going to let you live. You were a moron for thinking that. But it doesn't matter if you betrayed your friends or not. No one left this room.
Oh, yeah. Because like you said, he outs like at least a good 8 guys in this room, which isn't all of them. But she's not like, all right, everyone who wasn't just identified, you can leave. She's just like, cool. Hey, you guys want to fucking murder all these dudes?
And then as the Strabo and Nailhead get to work on murdering everybody in the room, she opens up a door, which is quickly filled in behind her as she walks out. She doesn't really care what happens in here. And I gotta say, what happens in here is, like, Eli Roth levels of gory. It feels silly at a certain point.
Well, I mean, she doesn't even leave because she waits for a bit to be like, oh, I gotta watch this. And she has to be like, hey, by the way, you guys, just remember, I'm the only one with a drop box in this room. So if you want to get your revenge on these guards who have been messing with you, great. I'll just sit here and watch. And she just kind of like watches dudes explode in gore for a while.
Yeah, because the first person to go down is Hootkins. And I want to send out a thank you to the folks who reminded us that Hootkins is actually the name of the actor that played Porkins. And that's why it's a little homage. They're not just cousins.
They're just the same cousins.
That William Hootkins went on to, he's like a Lucas favorite, or sorry, a Spielberg favorite, because he's also in some Indiana Jones movie.
Huzzah.
Yeah, he got a lot of work. He's like Ratzenberg, where Ratzenberg turns up in like that. Empire Strikes Back, and you're like, Jesus Christ, really? That dude from Cheers?
That guy?
And then he goes on to be like the voice of Pixar for forever.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think he got a little too politically unpopular, and they stopped calling him.
Did he? Because I swear I've seen him in everything still.
Is he still in all? Is he in Onward? I don't remember.
God.
I don't remember Onward.
I mean, I've seen it, but I can't remember much of it.
How did you think of Soul?
Soul was good. I liked Soul.
It is. It's all right. It's okay. I saw a lot of very cogent complaints about it, but still, I thought it was a good movie all the same.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the point. When I say this is gory, I mean it's like ludicrously gory. Hootkins is the first one to die, and it's just that Nailhead and another Bone King put spikes into his stomach and then tear him apart.
Oh, yeah. Like, we get everything from the point of view of Smite, because Smite basically gets trapped behind a flipped table against the wall. So for the most part, they aren't really looking at him, so he can manage to not get immediately murdered. But from where he is, he's just like, oh yeah, like one guy's literally getting ripped in two by two guys. Like, one's got the arms, one's got the legs, and they are just ripping him in half. They've got...
Yeah, that's like some bone tomahawk shit. One of them's got a straight-up ice cream scoop that made out of a skull, and he's just using it to take a guy's stomach out.
Oh, yeah. Just goes in there with a big sharpened skull and is like, and I'll take a scoop of this. There's a dude who gets just, like, two bone shivs through his eyes.
Yeah, everyone's getting murdered in just, like, the most hilarious ways.
Yeah.
Just, and again, it's funny because the murders here are like horror movie level, where they're so horrific, they're just impossible. Like, no one could be torn apart this easily by some bones and by some guys.
Oh, yeah. But it don't matter. People are getting, like, hit on the head, and their head explodes, and then after they explode, Nailhead's like, I'm gonna take a bite out of your face.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nailhead eats half of a guy's face off of his face. Like, just eats it like a corn of cob. Or corn on the cob, not a corn of cob.
Ah, yes, that just sounds a corn like, of cob.
That just sounds like the name of some stupid knight.
I am the corn of cob?
Wilt thou tarry?
Privy.
Anyway, Smite almost doesn't get out, because of course it's a room full of murderers, but everyone's so busy murdering that he manages to dive out the hole that the gang members came in through.
Oh yeah, I mean, at this point you have to imagine that, like, everyone's just glorifying in the nasty gore that they are bathing in, and he just kind of slip and slides his way through the place that all of them came in and is like, well, all right, good, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah, he just sort of dives down a hole to try and get away. And that's more or less the end of the chapter, is him sort of being like, well, fuck this.
Oh, yeah.
And he pieces out entirely. And then it's time to check in with Maul. Thank goodness, I don't like going without him for too long.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe Darth Maul has made his way back to the mess hall, where he is, because he's operating on that Zero goes by another name thing, he's going to go talk to Zero again.
Now, as far as Zero knows, Maul has been drawn and quartered, and...
yes, torn apart by the tearing him apart machine.
Yeah, he doesn't actually, you know, realize that Maul is still around, so Maul's just sort of been waiting in the darkness, watching him do stuff, because he's like, all right, I gotta wait. I wait until he sits down, and he's nice and comfy. He's had a few bites of his special order, I get actual meat meal. And then he's like, yo, mm-hmm. What up, fucker? I lived.
Yeah. Yeah. And Zero, who normally is one of those too cool for the room, nonplussed kind of guys, is like, what the what? And Maul's like, yeah, last time you saw me, you put me in a machine that was supposed to tear me apart. It didn't.
Here I am. Oh, shit.
Now, I want you to take a message to Iram Radeek for me, because he's very straightforward.
Oh, yeah. And Zero, for his part, is like, no, you don't understand. I'm not even scared that, like, of you, that you're alive, that you're going to fuck me up. I am scared because he thinks you are dead, and I fucked up that.
Yeah, and I got to assume, at a certain point, this guy's watched Darth Maul do all kinds of crazy shit, right? Like, he's seen him win three of those horrible gladiatorial fights, murder his way through just rooms of people, get out of being killed, and he's still like, yeah, but I'm more scared of Radeek. And I'm like, I feel like at a certain point, will instantly kill you becomes an equal level of fear for everybody who can do that.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, Iram Radeek is like, oh, no, he controls stuff in here, I guess, and he'll have me, I don't know, fucked up. But, like, Maul will also just wreck your shit, so, you know, you're looking at death or death, meh.
You're like, well, I'm not scared of you, Volcano. I'm scared of that other volcano. Like, you should be scared of both volcanoes. They're both volcanoes.
You mean my choices are or death.
Cake, please.
I'll have the chicken.
So, Zero tries to get up and leave, and Maul responds very charitably for Darth Maul by doing the fork grab and stab, but not into the guy's hand, just into his shirt.
Yeah. Just pins his sleeve there, and of course, Zero's the type of guy who has, you know, a bunch of bodyguards and whatnot looking out for him, just in case, and he's like, hey, you should probably tell them to sit the fuck down, or I will go ham on your dumb face.
Yeah, and yeah, because three guys at a nearby table immediately stand and start walking over, and Maul's just like, have them sit down, and Zero does that, and he's like, look, here's the deal. I want you to broker a weapons deal. I don't want to find out who Iram Radeek is. I don't give a shit. I want to buy something for him and then have people arrive here and pick it up for delivery. And that's all. I just want to give him money.
It's like, look, and I just let me give the Bando Gora a nuke. That's all I want.
Yeah. And he's like, no. Specifically Iram Radeek, it turns out he hates the Bando Gora.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we knew that they tried to kill him, so he's like, oh, no. Ever since that point, he's just been like, 100% will not ever do business with them.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to go ahead and guess the twist ending here if I can. I think that if the deal goes through, Maul gets the nuke and gives it to the Bando Gora because they're supposed to pick it up here from him at this prison. I think they just arm it and then try to fly away. And they're just like, yeah, we never killed him the first time around. We're finishing the job. We're turning this whole prison into a meltdown. But who knows? I have a whole lot of ideas about twists that I think are about to happen where they're probably all wrong.
Probably.
Yeah.
But Zero...
But he's just like, yeah.
Zero's like, nah, I'm still, you know, more afraid of Radik than you. And he's like, well, that's okay. Because you see, you remember a couple chapters ago where Coil tried to give me some white metaxas root? Well, I put it in your special food because you're the only one who gets to eat it, you jagoff. So I have an antidote.
And you already ate enough to kill you.
So how about you broker the deal and I give you an antidote?
And to Zero's everlasting credit, or probably just to Irem Radik's credit because of how scary he apparently is, Zero's like, no, up yours. Fuck you, buddy. No. And then he just passes out into his food.
Well, I mean, he at least is like, you don't understand. He will not do that. And he's like, change his mind. I can't. You don't understand. And then dies.
Or probably dies. If nothing else, he passes out. Because Maul picks him up by the head, looks in his eyes, drops him back into his food, and leaves. And as he's leaving, the three guys behind him start scurrying over to lift him up and help him.
Oh no, our boss.
Yeah, exactly. And Maul does what he does best, which is walk out of the room without looking back. This guy must be great at explosion parties.
Oh, yeah. Everybody loves a good explosion party.
Please tell me you wouldn't actually turn down the opportunity to go to an explosion party.
I mean, if someone was like, hey, we're having an explosion party. Do you want to come? I would be like, I need more details, but yes?
I know. Granted, there are several questions you want to ask. You don't want to find out it's some bullshit gender reveal.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, okay, explosion party. Is this an explosion that we are in or watching?
Details. Come to the explosion party. There'll be drinks.
Oh, well. You got me there.
I mean, like, if it was out in the desert somewhere where the explosion couldn't burn down California, and you just got to see a bunch of cool explosions and they weren't going to get you specifically... It's an explosion party. Come on. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds like fucking Burning Man.
And then you get to walk away from each and every one of the explosions all cool-like without looking at them.
Yeah.
And that kind of defeats the purpose of going to an explosion party, I think, but...
Well, I mean, I assume it's being both photographed and filmed so that you can get pictures of yourself walking away from explosions all cool-like and then also video of you doing so in slow motion.
I wonder if someone has actually done this. This idea that we're kind of floating right now. Has this happened? Has someone been like, well, let's go out in the desert and light bombs and then walk away from them so we have pictures of us walking away from explodies?
I mean, the answer is obviously yes. Some YouTuber influencer was like, oh, this sounds like the best idea anyone's ever had.
Hey, we're influencers. Why don't we do this?
Yeah, but we're not YouTube influencers.
Oh, come on. We have at least 3 videos on YouTube.
We have at least 3 people subscribed to our YouTube.
It's like 250 or something like that, because I don't post anything to it and I forgot how to. One of these days I'll remember how to do it and get back to work on it.
Yeah, one of these days.
But honestly, posting those things bald-faced to you, I mean, I know I'm supposed to stay out of YouTube comments, but every comment we have is like, these fucking idiots are dumb as hell.
Yeah, welcome to YouTube. Fuck them.
There are a lot madder there that we don't like D&D than people, our regular listener base is. Like just a lot madder.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to assume that the YouTube crowd is there like, oh, yeah, I'm just watching everybody who, you know, does D&D AP, because that's why I'm on YouTube looking at RPG stuff. And then they get to us and we're like, hey, did you know that game is a piece of shit and a diaper for idiots?
And they're like, oh, I meant to spend today on YouTube watching people walk all cool-like away from explosions, and instead I got let down.
Indeed.
All right, where are we going? That was the whole chapter.
Smite, we come back to.
It's time for Smite. Yeah. Smite's down in the bowels of the prison. He's between the shifty bits.
Oh, yeah, he's in the same corridor that the gang members came in through, which I have questions and concerns about given what happens in this chapter.
Well, you know, the whole thing is always constantly rearranging. It might be that he went down some side passage they didn't, or wriggled his way through a... No, I'm sure he knows this is the hallway the guards came down, and gang members came down, and he's like, hell no, I'm not staying in that corridor. I'm going to squeeze myself between two plates or something and get the fuck out of here.
That sounds like the worst possible idea you could do in a prison that is constantly shifting. Be like, ooh, I know, I want to get in the gears of this thing. That should be safe.
I mean, on the one hand, you are absolutely right. On the other hand, you have to take into account that the person that you're describing is a double agent guard working at a secret ultra death prison for both one murderer and Jabba the Hutt, a different murderer, and he's high on spice and quickly coming down from his high.
Oh, yeah, which is why I don't think he has enough presence of mind to be like, ooh, I should try and find different tunnels or whatever. I'm pretty sure he is just running.
Beelining?
Yeah.
Well, that could be, too.
Especially because what happens even later in the chapter.
So he is, as I mentioned, he is starting to come down off his spice, and he is literally thinking to himself, there's still spice in my quarters. I can go to my quarters and get more spice.
I mean, that
oh,
is...
Oh, no, wait. I might not be able to do that.
I mean, that's definitely the thoughts of a dude that is way too high coming down and being like, oh, no. Oh, no. I don't want to know things. I don't want to keep feeling feelings.
Being high was working great.
Oh, yeah. And he is, at least now that the glitter stim has started to wear off, he's like, oh, no. I can now rationally think about things and know that, on one hand, I am a completely unarmed guard, and wherever I go in this prison is a prison full of homicidal maniacs that want to murder me. And if I could get out, I can't go to Jabba because he will murder me.
And I can't go back to my quarters because other guards will murder me. There's really not much he could do at this point.
Oh, yeah. Like, at this point, he's basically like, the best chance that he has is maybe being able to get to like some shuttle out of here, because he's still a guard. He's got guard credentials. If he could get on that and leave and, I don't know, hide from Jabba somewhere, then maybe.
Yeah, but that's not what happens.
Oh, no, of course not.
Instead, while he's wandering around, he starts hearing shifty, slimy noises off in the distance of the tunnels.
Ah, yes. Sticky, clicking, and shifty, slapping.
Yep, that's shifty, clicking, and sticky, slapping. That's the things he's hearing, which honestly sounds like someone's just watching weird verpine porn in a different room to me.
I mean, someone might be.
You never know. I mean, it's a pretty open prison unless you're in the fight right now.
Aww.
They don't really seem to have, like, solitary or that kind of thing. But the book has been notably light on prison cliches, so for the most part. I mean, yeah, you've got the two gangs that fight with, like, shivs and stuff, but we don't have any, like, lockup or solitary or several, like, short cheating or nighttime visits and beatings. None of that stuff has happened.
No, not really. I mean, you don't really have to, because everyone's just going to fight and die anyway.
Yeah, plus we haven't had any of that sexy prison stuff where, like, they make Darth Maul shower and then they shoot him with a big hose.
Then he shoots you with his big hose. You know.
You're like, Darth Maul, line up for inspection, maggot.
Anyway, the wolf worm.
Oh, fine. I guess we can get to the point. It's finally time to meet the wolf worm, like, 39 chapters into the book.
Yes, the Cyrox, the wolf worm of Cog Hive 7. He's like, oh, shit. You know, I had heard stories about it, but I didn't realize that it actually was around. And then it telepathically speaks to his brain with a bunch of different voices.
So it turns out, this is our first time learning about this, that the Cyrox, when it eats people, kind of like also ingests their brain and current personality and thinking.
Yeah, so it is screaming in his brain like the final feelings and thoughts of a whole bunch of prisoners that it has eaten, which is fairly terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely terrifying. So he doesn't even see it first. At first, he in his own brain, he starts getting a million like telepathic messages that are like, let me out, let me out, let me out, let me out. I will kill you. It's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, well, that fucking sucks.
He's like, huh. So it turns out not only is this horrible monster real, it is sentient and psychic. Well, that's fun.
Uh-huh. And that's when he finally sees it. It's looming overhead, sticking to the walls and grossly skipping around, and it is enormous. It basically, from what I hear from the description, is basically is maggot-shaped and colored. Like, it's fat and white and glistening.
It is.
So it's blind not a... and
greasy and kind of kind of messed up, and it's got Demogorgon from Stranger Things mouth.
Yes, yeah, its mouth opens up and petals, and then there's rings of teeth in there, and it just... It sounds completely nasty as opposed to if you were picturing some kind of like big snake kind of thing. No, this is much more grub.
Yeah, when you hear wolf worm, I'm imagining like a hairy worm that kind of wriggles around and has like a snout and is sort of animal-ish. But this is just some gross nastiness that shows up and is like, hey, I'm a nightmare thing. Also, I shoot brain images. Ha ha!
Yeah, so it's a big monster, and Smite is not in any kind of mental state to deal with a big monster right now, so he runs away screaming!
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I get it. At this point, the fact that he didn't just be like, you know what, I'm just gonna lie down here, you go ahead, eat me, I'm fine, I'm out, is, you know, at least good for him. He has just seen the most over-the-top gruesome deaths of basically everyone he knows at this prison, and then ran into a nightmare monster and was like, all right, no, I've still got enough presence of mind. I can run.
So he does. And he starts just running and screaming and jumping over obstacles and doing anything he can to get away from this thing, which is just leisurely squishing after him. And it's every bit fast enough to just keep up with him anyway.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, he has gained some distance. It's not like... It just sits right behind him. He has gotten a little bit away, and, you know, maybe he could have gotten away if he didn't slam headlong into Vaz Nailhead.
Yep. As soon as he makes his way down a corridor, he runs right back to this place where he came from in the first place, that one room, and just bonks into Vaz Nailhead and falls down. And Nailhead's like, oh, hey, it's you. You didn't think you'd get away from us, did you? Hey, buddy. And he says something I've never heard anyone in Star Wars say before, and it made me happy to see someone say it. When he's like, where are you going? What you doing, bro?
Yeah, the fact that not only is he, I think, the only character I've seen call someone bro, but it's italicized for emphasis in the book is fabulous.
I was like, ah, sweet. Fine. Bro is now Star Wars canon. That's awesome. Or at least Star Wars Legends. I don't remember where this falls in the rules, but someone definitely gets called bro, and it's Augustine Smite.
And, you know,
and he's just like,
he's fucked entirely. And he's just like, oh, okay. Well, you know, I can hear this monster coming up. So, hey, guess what? You better watch out.
I love this because they're like, what are you doing, man? What's going on? He's like, well, I'm trying to get away. What do you mean you're trying to get away? From us? What are you talking about? And he's like, oh, you guys probably ought to watch out. What for? Oh, for that. And then, you know, the screaming starts.
Oh, yeah. I have to wonder. Now, did Smite have enough presence of mind this time to be like, all right, cool. Maybe I can get away from the worm while it eats these guys.
I don't know. I don't know how much presence of mind he has at all, but I do think that, I mean, I honestly know how Joe Schreiber books go, because this is our second time reading one, where you think that he kind of defines characters that he likes, and then he'll leave them alive for a little while longer than everyone else, and then he pretty quickly is like, no, I won't. I'll kill whoever.
remember when I said I'd kill you last? I lied.
Yeah, so I have no way of knowing if he makes it out of this situation or not. I do know that the screaming starts.
Oh, yeah. The screaming. It started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because someone's getting eaten by that big worm. We just don't know who yet.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, this was in the passageway, so you have to assume that she was like, all right, well, thanks for murdering everyone. You all can go back to the prison now. And they just kind of went, oh, okay.
I mean, do you think that Siddiqui is both aware of and using the worm for things?
See, that was my question with this, is I was like, okay, I'm fine with imagining that somehow this giant worm doesn't just get, you know, absolutely chopped into bits every time the prison rearranges itself. Sure, fine, whatever. But the fact that it was like, oh, she made a pathway from, like, the cells of these prisoners to this meeting room, and mm-hmm. none of the prisoners saw the worm on their way there, but it was there when Smite tries to leave. I'm like, how did it manage to wiggle its way into this corridor then?
I don't know, man. The worm works in mysterious ways.
The worm works as the worm wills.
Yeah, the worm turns? I think that's the thing people say. Maybe that's what happened. It turned in here.
Yeah, it turned
the worm
into
the
a parking lot.
The worm turns up. That's the full... People never say the entire phrase. It's the as the worm turns up.
Oh, yeah.
So it just kind of showed up in there. Yeah, and you don't have to worry about it. That's how it happens.
Sure. I mean, if there is something later on where Siddiqui was like, tee-hee-hee, I opened a passageway for the worm to get in there, I'd be like, okay, sure, fine. But
yeah, it makes sense.
Unless that happens, I'm going to be squinting a little hard at you, okay? You're on thin fucking ice, Book.
Now, if you want to hear something that's on thin ice, you want to hear my lowest odds or theory about what's happening in the future of the book?
Go for it.
Now that we've learned that the worm is sentient and has all the minds of its former victims in it, I think it's not likely. I actually put really light odds on this, and I'm not leaning towards it at all. But I would love it if it's that the worm has Iron Radik in it, and that's why he doesn't want anyone seeing him, because he doesn't even exist anymore. He's just one of the many thousands of voices screaming inside this worm.
That would be hilarious.
And there's a whole organization built up around him, and everyone's terrified of him because every time he calls someone in for an individual meeting, they get eaten by a giant worm. So, like, he had managed to get the whole weapon facility up and going on its own. He had everything working, and then he got matched accidentally in a gladiatorial arena, eaten by a giant worm when he lost, and then he just kept running the business anyway because he's inside of a telepathic super worm.
That would be hilarious and very unlikely.
Yeah, I'm not laying high odds on that. If I'm laying Vegas odds, that's like 2,500 to 1. I don't think that's the case. I just think it's a funny idea.
Great. I love it. I love the idea, and it definitely mm-hmm. isn't true.
I know. But I'm also, while we're on the odds, I don't think that fucking weak way is Iron Radik either. I think that's even less likely.
Oh, yeah, that's bullshit. If that weak way is Iron Radik, I'm going to be so angry.
Yeah, that just can't be right. Iron Radik can't be a weak way. He's got to be less of a quivering heap and more of a sex haver. I mean, come on. His name is Radik.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, if it isn't Coil or Daiquiri, I'm going to be very sad.
Yeah, I think there's also a solid chance it's a character we just haven't met yet. Because that's another Schreiber tradition is are we four-fifths of the way through the book? How about some more characters, guys?
Guys, you see these characters?
I made you some more characters.
Hmm.
I mean, I would love for it to be Coil, but I don't think it is, given that what happens real soon here.
Aww.
So, speaking of which, Maul is arriving at the morgue with Owen in tow, carrying his largely almost dead father.
Well, yeah, he shows up and is like, hey, my dude, we gotta go, so pick up your mostly dead dad, and you gotta mm-hmm. follow me over to the morgue.
Yeah. Owen at this point has pretty much lost any chutzpah he might have had at one point in his life, and it's just like, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, no, he is broken.
Yeah. I mean, if the only person who ever talks to you is Darth Maul, and all he ever does is say, like, your dad will tell me the information I need, or I will kill him and then you. Listen, kid.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's not even really being...
When your own dad is like, oh, no, you are definitely a worthless piece of shit fighter and would die immediately to anyone, you're like, oh, cool, 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 right? Love it.
Yeah. I especially love that he just doesn't even seem to, like, try to menace the kid at all. The thing I liked about Darth Maul for the most part is that he is so matter of fact and yet still so evil, so that you don't get a whole lot of like, yes, the dark side says I will slice you up. Instead, he's just like, hey, man, listen to this. You're going to tell me this information and then I'm going to kill you, or I'll kill you slower. Just very matter of fact. And I love it about him. But anyway, him and Owen drag Artigan to the morgue. Where he throws Artigan up on a table. He wakes up weakly and he's like, hey, man, you're going to have to help me contact the Bando Gora.
Oh, yeah. He's like, hey, Owen, this dude say anything about the Bando Gora? And I was like, dude, he is not even able to talk. What are you talking about? He is completely high on infection and needs medicine. He's like, all right, well, you're useless. Hey, old man. I need the hailing frequency for the Bando Gora. Huh? Slap, slap. Hey, buddy.
I forgot that. I forgot the high a long time ago. Forgot.
Oh, well, that's neat. So I'm going to kill your son.
Yeah, hey, look, you better remember, because otherwise I'm going to kill your kid.
Oh, huh. Yeah, here you go. Here's a little pad. You don't even need to say it out loud. Just punch it in.
And he does. He punches in the phone number, and Maul's like, okay, great. And then he just turns and leaves again.
And Owen's like, hey, man, you know the clarion for the next match is going off right now. And he's like, meh, I don't give a shit.
I think he's past the point of pretending to go along with the prison at the, although who knows, because he doesn't go get in another fight. He instead heads off to, what do they call it, the factory, where he's going to meet up with Coil again.
Oh, yeah. Well, first he has to, of course, go, since he's already in the morgue and this is where his holotransmitter is. Just check in real quick with Sidious again.
Yeah. He just calls Sidious and is like, my master, I figured it out. I know who Iron Radik is.
I found
and
him. Sidious doesn't even.
Sidious, sadly, because I love doing Sidious, doesn't even say anything. He just looks like I'm exasperated that this should have taken less time than this and hangs up the phone.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't really get the conversation. We get the very beginning of it, and then they're just like, anyway, later on, Maul's just going about his business, and he's like, aw, Sidious didn't even care. He just sort of impatiently listened about how I found a dude and then went, great, and then nodded and turned off the call.
Yeah, listen, kid, I'm on lap 3, and it's really hard to come back if you're playing as Yoshi.
Uh-huh, yeah, that's great, uh-huh. Yeah, no.
Motherfucking blue shell!
Yeah, I'll have to call you
back. Yeah, I'll call you back. now what happens is that Darth Maul goes off to visit Coil. As you may remember from, oh gosh, like 12-15 chapters ago, he commissioned Coil to make some counterfeit credits for him.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, he managed to make 300,000 counterfeit credits in a little box. So, I mean,
yeah,
good for him.
Briefcase. And Darth Maul takes a quick look at them and is like, yeah, these are fine. Thank you very much. And I guess I'll just take my leave of you.
Yeah. Again, Maul, not about the small talk, just like shows up. Is it ready? Good. I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm. Coil, thankfully, is not about the small talk either here because he has nothing to say either. And the two of them just got to go their separate ways after Maul establishes that while the credits would probably not stand up to extremely close scrutiny, they will do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's just using it to essentially buy a meeting. Be like, look, I have credits. He's not really like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have to, like, deposit this at a bank or something.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I keep wondering is, isn't Iron Radik exactly the kind of person that's going to give extraordinary scrutiny to this money?
I mean, I feel like Iron Radik is the kind of person that would already know that he had commissioned 300,000 fake credits to be made.
That's true. He'd also just recognize the value of counterfeit. He'd be like, you know what? This isn't real, but it's good enough, and I can probably do something with it, so thank you.
He fucks off after getting it, and apparently not all of the gang members died to the worm or went along with that shit, because he does, you know, bump shoulders with a Bone King on his way, and then just, you know, punches him in the solar plexus and is like, how dare you touch me?
Yeah, I love that shit. It doesn't even have any particular reason to do it, but the two of them, because the clarion's still going off. He's done all of this in the 5-minute minimum. So he's just trying to get back to his cell with in Clarion time with everybody else. Bumps into a random Bone King and is like, well, I got to punch this guy so hard that he almost dies.
Oh, yeah. This dude hit me slightly too hard for it to just be an accident. I got to make sure he knows that he's my bitch.
Yeah. Pops him real hard in the solar plexus. And as he's coming up from the process of doing that, across the just giant crush of fast moving bodies, who does he see but that Weequay?
Ah, yes, that Weequay with a bird on his shoulder, and he is just feeding it little bantha suet, which, you know, the fact that you know that it's bantha suet from this far away is, that's impressive, honestly, Maul.
Yeah, that was an interesting moment. Do we primarily use bantha suet in this galaxy? Is that how that works?
I guess, but he's like,
so
oh,
when
no.
you see some suet, you're like,
I understand. You pulled out a scrap of greasy looking meat. Oh, I know what that is.
I mean, like, even on Earth where we are right now, there suet can come from cattle, sheep, and occasionally other animals. So, but if I were to spot a hump of it from like across a busy hallway, I would not be like, that looks like sheep suet.
Man, I wouldn't even be able to go, that looks like suet. I'd go, that is something.
I mean, I might recognize suet, I think, because I've used it for things before. It looks like lumps of, you know, basically gross, kind of dried, waxy fat. But I feel like this is definitely one of those examples of someone saying, oh, I can't just say suet. People will be like, that's not very Star Warsy. I better put a Star Wars word in there.
Yeah, and couldn't even just say, like, fed him some gross meat from his pocket or whatever. It has to be specifically suet from specifically a bantha.
Yeah, and Maul has to know it's from a bantha. So either that's just the most common form of suet in Star Wars, which would be weird because banthas aren't, you know, ubiquitous or anything. Or it's, like I was saying, it's a standard trick in Star Wars books to be like, oh, you can't just say cheese in here. You got to say Rancor cheese or people get mad at you for it's not being Star Warsy enough.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that much is true.
Mm-hmm. Or if you can't do that, you got to put in the name of a planet and then the name of an element and then the thing. So you can, if you can't say it's just Rancor cheese, you can say it's Coruscant fire cheese. Mm. That's acceptable as well.
Delicious fire cheese.
I could go for some Coruscant. Dude, Coruscant fire cheese sounds good as hell. We have this thing going on in my house right now where I bought some cheese to eat. These little squares of cheese that are like white cheddar with smoked black pepper in them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really, really good. And my daughter likes them too. And Sage likes them. So I've been feeding her these occasional cheese bits. But the first time I ever gave her one, her and I were busy pretending to be robots. Because that's just one of the games she likes to play. She likes to walk around and say, I am a Sage robot. I will walk like this. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So one time while her and I were pretending to be robots, I said, Sage robot, would you like some robot hyper cheese? And since then, we've gotten three more bags of this crap. Every time she sees it, she's like, I want hyper cheese. give me robot hyper cheese.
Oh, that's excellent.
I'm really happy with it because I know exactly what she means. She wants that smoked black pepper cheddar.
Yeah, that's the hyper cheese.
That's hyper cheese. And now this house, that's just hyper cheese. And it is really good.
Sweet.
Yeah. Anyway, he thinks he sees Radik. Neither John or I are convinced, though. I don't think that's fucking Radik.
No.
Radik's not a Weequay.
Bullshit. But he's still,
I call,
you know,
bullshit on that, bro.
He still, you know, goes diving through the crowd to try and go after him and runs smack into a guard. And he's like, hey, where are you going, maggot?
Yeah. I love that the Weequay is just staring him down across the crowd, too. Just, what? And I assume it's, I mean, come on, that's not Radik. So this Weequay is just like, oh, shit, isn't that guy supposed to be dead? It's very hard to not be dead if I left you to be dead earlier.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is weird. That's probably what's going through his head. But yeah, he runs into a guard who's like, where are you going, maggot? And the guard, Maul's like, to my quarters. The Clarion's playing, you idiot.
He's like, oh, what's in that bag you got there, huh? What's in the case? Nothing.
That stuff I found on the factory floor. It is salvage. I have claimed it.
Oh, yeah? Well, let me see. And he tips it over, and instead of money, out comes a pile of bones. So no, he's put you the spilled money my somewhere. Bones.
I think it's just in there with a. I think Coyle was nice enough to provide him with a case that has a false bottom.
Nah, I think he stashed it somewhere.
Ah, in the usual secret place.
Yes, he put it in a secret place.
Right up his dark side.
Ah.
Yeah. And then the guard's like, ah, goddammit, you don't have anything but a big box of bones. Move along, mister.
Move along. Now, we don't know if...
And there you go.
You know, this Weequay is gonna hang around or do stuff. I mean, I think he just fucks off at this point.
Oh, yeah, he's gone. By the time Maul gets to where he was hoping to run into the Weequay and grab him, he's just not there anymore. He vanishes into the crowd. I'm sure he pulls that movie move where a person walks by and occludes him from view long enough for him to vanish.
Oh, yeah.
You know, ninja style.
Now, my assumption...
That's definitely what happens.
...about the Weequay is that he is the bird trainer for Radik, because Radik's like, well, yeah, I need to use the birds for this. I don't know how to train birds. I'm a weird, like, engineer businessman, so obviously I have to have a guy for that.
Yeah, you don't think that Irem Radik is going to handle the birds on his own, do you? He's a huge worm. Birds love that shit. odds aren't. Odds are against it, but still.
Still.
What if he runs into an early bird? That would be bad for him.
Oh, no. That would get him a
but
worm.
But that's the end of the... That is the end of the chapter, though. Right away, he runs into who he thinks Radik is, should have been, and of course, he is not, and he's just like, God damn it, and then he just continues on his way to his quarters, obviously because in the next two chapters, he's going to get in another gladiatorial fight.
Well, obviously. I mean,
there's no way it won't happen.
No, anytime they set that clarion call off, if it's not Maul getting in a fight, then what are we even doing here?
I know. We don't want to see any gladiator fights that aren't Maul. I would, at this point, be literally shocked if there was even one gladiator fight in this book that doesn't have Darth Maul in it.
There's only one that I wouldn't be shocked, and that would be Owen. They might show Owen's fight, and he, depending on what he wants to do, Owen will either win and be like, ah, I have found my killing instinct, or lose and become part of the worm.
Yeah, that could be neat, just because eventually, you know, Maul's going to have to run into that worm, and if he's still being like, I'm Owen, I'm only half a man, then he'd be like, ah, I understand.
My daddy,
No, you're right, that might happen. Or, honestly, it could be kind of neat if they finally did meet up with Irem Radik, and all that Maul did was just set him up so he was next to fight.
Eh.
That would be at least kind of funny. Anyway, we have no way of knowing, because we're done for this week.
That's right. No earthly way of knowing which direction
the book,
we are going.
I don't want to read ahead. Yeah. I don't want to do any reading ahead, because if I do any reading ahead, I might, like, learn stuff that would stop all my ludicrous conspiracy theories.
Yeah. And also, if you read ahead, you would probably immediately blend it together with whatever else we have read.
Yeah, I haven't done that in, like, 3 episodes in a row. Come on now. You give me some credit.
Yeah, because you haven't read ahead.
Yeah, I'm being careful now.
Good. Everyone's very proud of you. Your mother and I are so proud of you.
I've worked very hard to craft this empire of podcasting.
We're putting this podcast right on the fridge.
That's where I put all the podcasts. I edit them on the fridge.
That's right. We've got a smart fridge and it all goes in there. Mm-hmm. Web 2.0.
That's the way it works. All right, so thank you so much for listening, everybody. As always, why don't you step on by to our Patreon and join us at the $2 level, where we will tell you weird stories about stuff we found on Wikipedia. That's Expanded Expounded Universe, our sub show to this show.
That's right. There's so much garbage on Wikipedia.
Patreon.com/System Mastery.
Do it.
$2 level. Go there. Go there and support us. And until such time as you do, I've been Elan Slezbagiano.
And I love big, juicy worms.